Welcome. My name is Aaron Shaw, and if you work in a veterinary clinic and you're dealing with neck, back, wrist pain, really sort of any aches and pains from the work you do, I want to email you a free veterinary ergonomic checklist that you can start using today to start fixing this immediately.
That sounds like a really great resource, Aaron, that honestly, I can't think of anybody in this profession that would not benefit from that. And most people can probably resonate with the need as well. Welcome, everybody, to the Resilient Vet Podcast, where we help vets and teams build lasting, fulfilling careers through sustainable mind-body strategies. So I'm very excited for today's episode. We are talking about ergonomics in the veterinary clinic. That is so important because we all know how physically demanding this profession can be. And we're not just going to talk about it in theory. We are going to talk about what happens every single day, during the day, all day long in clinics that leads to the wear and tear on our bodies that a lot of us feel at way too young of an age. This is all part of our mission to build resilient veterinary teams. I'm Dr. Jennifer Edwards. I'm a conscious leadership coach and a professional speaker, and I have been a veterinarian for over 25 years. I am also the founder of the Core Element Leadership Framework. And what I do is I work with leaders and teams on the inner side of leadership. So the stress, the overwhelm, the, you know, I just want to create something with my team and I just can't quite get there. That's where I come in to help you build the communication, the collaboration, and the culture that will help to make your life flow and to make your business successful. So welcome, and Aaron, take it away.
Thank you. My name is Aaron Shaw, and I am an occupational therapist, a health nut, and the spouse of a veterinarian, which is what got me into the position here as I stand in front of a microphone in this podcast. And I really get tired of seeing great people in vet medicine get burned out or injured. And ultimately, too many actually leave the profession that they really care so much about. And what I felt like is that there needed to be something more than talks on just this broad concept of wellness. And instead, we really need systems. There needs to be better systems for physical and emotional durability. And that's why I created Project VetSpan to help leaders build healthier, stronger, more durable teams. I know I mentioned this free resource, so I just want to say this one more time. If you want a free veterinary ergonomic checklist, just send me an email. My email is info@projectvetspan.com. And just in the subject line, just put ergo checklist or something, and I'll send you this document. Free, easy, super, super simple, and easy to use. But right now, I have to say that in vet med, and I talk to a lot of vets, a lot of techs, it seems like there's too much pain, like literally too much physical pain. And it seems like there's this assumption that physical discomfort is just part of the job. It's just shrugged off as like, this is just the wear and tear that we have to do in order to take care of our patients. And I'm here to say it doesn't have to be. That does not have to be the norm. But let's hear from somebody who's been there and done that. Jennifer, have you ever felt physical discomfort from the work you're doing in practice? And if so, like what was that about? What did you feel? What type of things were you doing?
Yes, many times. I can think of so much from the exam room, doing, you know, hundreds of squats per day. I see, you know, a lot of my patients on the floor, canine patients, and I feel like it's less stressful for them. So unless they're really tiny, they're mostly on the floor. And so I'm down and up and down and up and down and up. And it's great exercise, but sometimes after a while, that can be very fatiguing on the body. One of the biggest places that I remember, you know, when I was in practice full time was in dentistry. So surgery as well, if I wasn't careful about my posture and sometimes the standing in one place for a long time, but really dentistry, because we are sitting at a table. Now I had a saddle stool so that it tried to, you know, keep my pelvis in a good neutral position and all of that. But when we are suturing inside of a mouth, and you know, especially some of the brachycephalic breeds, I remember extracting upper back molars, and I'd have to literally sometimes like twist myself upside down with my neck contorted, you know, trying to get in there to suture some of the gingiva after a surgical extraction. And some of these procedures are long, right? So I had times in the middle of a procedure where I would have to stand up and I'd have to move. I also had times when in surgery and dentistry, when I had to have my team go get my water bottle and literally hold it for me as I drank because my hands were cramping because I was dehydrated. It's just like another form of pain. Was that muscle cramping? I mean, my fingers would start to curl in. It was so bad. So, I mean, I could go on and on about it, but the opportunity for being intentional but preventing this pain is huge. So you talked about ergonomics and your ergonomic checklist. We kind of all have an idea of what that word means, but when you say ergonomics, Aaron, what do you actually mean by that?
Yeah, good question. So ergonomics, the easiest definition to think about is really designing the job demands to make sure that they fit the capabilities of the person doing the job. And if they are on par, then you have the physical capacity to do what is expected of you to get the job done. When there is a mismatch of that, there's a higher risk of having musculoskeletal disorders, aches, pains, injuries, everything from cramping hands to a cramping neck and a sore back. And what I find in vet med is that there's pretty often this pretty major discrepancy from the contortions and the prolonged positions and, you know, in the physical, you know, grip and pinch and holding and restraining. All of these things are at a higher level than what the providers can sustain. And that mismatch means that there's an ergonomic risk. And I think that most people, when we think about ergonomics, often kind of default to it's an equipment thing, you know. And I think that in a lot of the ergonomics world, we think of an ergonomic desk. Right, you have monitors that you can change the height on, and you can have, you know, saddle chairs, which are, you know, it's a great example of a piece of equipment. But unfortunately, for vet medicine, the contortions of, as you described, doing some dentistry stuff, there is not a piece of equipment that can keep your body, you know, structurally aligned to look into the mouth of a brachiocephalic dog and get back into their, like, there's just not a, you know, the equivalent of a, you know, high low desk that can get you where you need to be. And I would, this is what always kind of baffles me too, and I'm talking to vets about this, is I would ask you, the physical demands that you went through, you know, while in practice, was there a course you ever took in vet school to help you understand the physical demands and to prepare your body for those contortions and twists and bent and prolonged positions? Like, tell me what course you took to help you understand what you had to be prepared, physically prepared for. And typically the answer is a laugh or like, yeah, no.
Nothing. Yeah. It wasn't even talked about, let alone a course.
Yeah. So what I want to do in this episode is really walk you through a few simple ways you can start to assess your own ergonomic situation. And I recognize that this is a podcast. We are showing video here, but I'm really stuck behind a microphone, so I can't get too visual with this. But I want us to be kind of planting a seed for us. So it'll be a little bit about how we can assess our ergonomics in the vet space, and I'll also give you some real tools you can start using. And I'll throw in even another bonus. I mentioned this free checklist, but if you're going to email me and you want that checklist, awesome. If you really want to dig in, if you send me like a video clip, this is where I get some really great, can help give people a ton of feedback. 15 seconds, 30 second video clip of you doing something that feels like it's kind of a challenging positions to be in or a challenging task to do, send me that or send me a few photos and I will respond with a few quick tips for that. And it's a little tips that can go a long way.
Yeah, that's, wow, what an opportunity, because getting direct feedback on your own physical positioning is huge, because very often we are not aware, as somebody who spent a lot of time training in couples dancing, and people would say, oh, you're doing this. I'd be like, no, I'm not. They're like,
Yeah,
Here's
you
a
are.
video, and I'd be like, oh, I am. Like, we just really don't have always a 100% accurate assessment of our own posture in space. And I loved how you talked about the idea of ergonomics of being fit for a job, right? Like, it's just alignment, it's a match. And the truth is, we know the laws of physics. You know, when there's stress, the weaker of the two is what's going to give. And if the body is the weaker of the two, then that is going to give out, unfortunately. So when we think about how we can actually assess ourselves when it comes to ergonomics and how we're doing with our body, what are some ways that somebody might be able to start to take a look at themselves and say, I think I'm doing all right, but maybe I'm not, or I know I'm not doing great, but I don't really know in what way. All I know is that I ache. So how can somebody start this on their own? And I'm also particularly interested in neck pain. I think that's very common. And for me, that was always, and honestly, to this day, it's always my biggest issue. And I think because of so many years of being in those awkward positions. So I'm just kind of curious about both of those.
Yeah, neck pain is incredibly common, and literature always puts neck back pain kind of together. In conversations, neck pain comes up far more with the people that I talk to, especially people that are in the OR that are and doing anything dental is probably the worst. But for to doing a self-assessment, first I would say if you are literally, and imagine like a solopreneur, like somebody, if you're just by yourself, it is so hard to have a clear view of what you're doing. And your example with dancing, perfect example. I think we probably have all seen pictures of ourselves at in social gatherings or we're chit-chatting and look at yourself, you're like, why am I contour? Like, what am I doing? Right? It looks so weird. And like never during this certain event, if again socializing or something, like I don't remember like having my hip out to the side or what I was pointing at or like what's going on. But it just shows that once we are focused on a task, the task is all consuming. And we still have proprioception, but it takes a back seat, especially in the, cognitively challenging space of veterinary medicine. You have to be focused on the task at hand. And if you sprinkle in a little bit of, dare I say, codependence and, pride and like this case has to be perfect and I'm going to give it all and neck pain be damned, it can be hard to even recognize until it's kind of too late, until you feel the discomfort. So the best thing you could probably do, I mean, one would be have an ergonomic, occupational therapist nerd like myself come in and watch and be like, well, there's a red flag. But second to that, it could be having a peer. I think it's having somebody else with outside eyes that can kind of, set some ground rules and say like, hey, you've been kind of bent over in that position for a few minutes now, and I know that you normally you talk about your neck hurting after 5 minutes. So having somebody that can kind of be that outside set of eyes can be helpful. But even more than that, I think having somebody take a picture of you or a minute video of you doing something, and this is why I have some people, especially in the OR, that will send me videos of themselves and say like, what is happening to my body when I'm doing this? And to see that, and as soon as they see it, half the diagnosis is kind of it's there, it's in front of you. You're like, oh, 5 minutes in, I realize I start hunching over, but you have to have those outside eyes to see that. So I think that it's a buddy system. It is, for as awkward as it may be to have somebody take a picture of you or to set your phone up while you're doing a procedure or doing an assessment can be super helpful. But let's dig into the neck specifically. So one thing that I wanted to think about is either during your last procedure or treatment or during your next one that you have coming up after listening to this, I want you to think about where your head is in space. So take that second and think about, is your head craning forward or is it pointing down? So I can always think of this. If you look around, it's probably not hard to see. Look at anybody looking at a cell phone. Heads, the cell phone's down around kind of the rib cage as we all kind of like look down to kind of, I want to mind my own business because I'm waiting in the checkout line or something like that. And your head is pointed down. That is a red flag. So sometimes just thinking about, doing this little check-in and say, am I looking more at the ground by my feet, basically, or my patient is, down versus being closer with your head up. As soon as your head tilts down, we have little, paraspinal muscles and cervical support muscles that it's a lot of work to hold this bowling ball of a head weight. And as soon as you tip that forward, the work demands go through the roof of those little muscles. And yeah, they can do that for a minute or two here and there. That's normal. But through an entire procedure or an entire assessment, that's a risk. So sometimes just doing that check-in is worth a pause. And again, this is where sometimes the buddy system can help, where even if you set an alarm or has, if you have an assistant that could set an alarm at every 15 minutes, it just gives a little ding and say, like, when it dings, where's your head? And you may find more often than not that it's either, contorted off to the side or bent and twisted. And because that may be part of the job and there's no other way to get into the mouth of a dog, it may just be a moment for you to say, let me take a pause and correct this. Just kind of reset it a little bit, because it may not, there may not be a way to completely get away from it, but we know what good posture feels like too. So if, even right now, as you're listening, if you can think about, sitting up or standing up nice and tall right now, think there's like a string from the top of your head pulling you up towards the ceiling. Just thinking about that on occasion is a great thing to think about. And the other thing, which is uncomfortable for a lot of people, is celebrating the double chin. So the double chin is when you tuck your chin back and you feel like that extra roll of what feels like flabby fat under your chin, around your neck. That's good. That's okay. You don't have to live like that forever. But what it does, it's doing the opposite of like that forward over, hunched over posture that we get in our cervical spine. So doing that chin tuck, super simple, super easy. I mean, tell people you're doing this so they don't think like, what the heck's going on? You're looking kind of weird. You grew another chin here today. But I think that it's getting in the habit of doing that sometimes that can make a big difference. And so that would be my tip for the neck.
Yeah. And it's so true. I mean, I find myself all the time looking down at my cell phone and I try to remember to like hold the cell phone up. But if you're standing in the grocery line and you get your cell phone up here in front
of you, everybody,
it's a little awkward. But yeah, I mean, it's so pervasive now in society. I mean, they've even come up with a term for it, tech neck.
Tech neck,
right? Yeah. And I was listening to a book and he said the fact that we had to come up with a term to describe the remodeling of our anatomy is pretty sad.
It's crazy.
I mentioned earlier about times that when I was in surgery and dentistry and I would start to get cramps in my hands from dehydration, or sometimes, especially because I did a lot of dentistry, it can be work in a big dog. I did a lot of, complex surgical extractions and, it can take a little while and it's like, it's this combination of tension in the hand, but also a relaxation, because actually less is more. But that really takes something. I would just get muscle cramps sometimes. There were times where I had an imprint in my hand from the elevator. Like there was so much that went on. And I'm just curious from your perspective. The neck, I think, is a little bit more obvious. But when you are working with people and you see issues with their hands and their wrists, even, maybe even their forearms, what are you seeing? What are you experiencing? And what do you have to say for people about that?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm a hand nerd, I would say. I'm a certified hand therapist, which is part of my specialty in occupational therapy. And I think that veterinarians, vet techs, and dental hygienists, like those three groups have always been, like human dental hygienists have always been in like the top group of people that I would see in practice with elbow pain, wrist pain, finger pain, hand, like, and realizing that, as you explained, like the physical demands with your hands is really high and really things that you can't compromise. I mean, if you have a tool in your hand, and of course, if it's, in contact with an animal, you can't compromise that. And so if that means being uncomfortable, if that means risking a hand cramp or imprinting the tool into your hand, like those are all like, wow, that's pretty intense. But it's a non-negotiable. So we have to figure out a way to let the muscles do their best work by trying to find what we call a neutral position. So to find a neutral position, again, bear with me if you're listening to this from an audio only, but if you hold your hand up like you're going to give the stereotypical karate chop, right? So it's just like straight fingers, straight wrist. And if you go from that karate chop, use it for good, not evil. If you go from that karate chop, and from here, make a gentle fist. And if you pause right there, and if you look at your wrist, you're going to notice is kind of, it's actually bent back slightly. We would say extended. So, you know, your knuckles are a little bit further back than your wrist. Your wrist isn't perfectly straight. It's actually bent back. And so from that position, if you've made a hard, hard fist, you're going to punch something. So that position, you can relax, but that position is a neutral wrist. So, you know, you're able to like have a forceful grip. Your wrist is technically extended a little bit, which is the way it's supposed to be. That gives mechanical advantage to your muscles. So now if you go back to that fist, make that nice hard fist. But what I want you to do is hold that hard fist, and I want you to bend your wrist forward like you're knocking on a door, basically. So you're flexing your wrist, but you're trying to maintain that really, really hard fist. And you're going to notice immediately, one, it's not comfortable, and you can't hold a fist quite as hard. Because we're taking the kinematics, the biomechanics of your wrist and saying, the muscles can no longer do their best work. And yet, when I see people with our hands in a dog's mouth or in the OR or palpating something, very often the wrist is kind of bent and twisted and kind of reaching around to kind of palpate or to manipulate something. Those muscles have no chance of doing their best work. The tendons are under stress, the ligaments are under stress. And if you do it for 1 or 2 seconds, not a big deal. If you happen to have this as part of your job description and this is just your career, the risk is high. Sooner or later, there's going to be some sort of signal, elbow soreness, wrist soreness, paresthesias, very common of, you know, carpal tunnel syndrome and, cubital tunnel syndrome, like these things that'll cause hand numbness from the position. So really, I think the step one for the wrist and hand is having that awareness. And one is recognizing there are some positions you just have to be able to get into that are less than ideal. But what we can do, again, to kind of go back to this buddy system concept, is if you can talk about this with your peers and say, hey, and Jennifer, you're kind of the case in point. If you have your colleagues that are, giving you sips of water because your hands are temporarily crippled, that's a sign. that would be a big sign. Yeah, let's not go quite that far. But it may be an opportunity to say, hey, when I do this procedure, I tend to get my hands get cramping. I feel really uncomfortable, or I'm sore. You know, maybe I can get through it right now, but I feel the effects later on in the night. To have a peer that is aware of these positions that you have to be in, we can all understand what a neutral wrist is. If you see me in this weird position because I'm so focused on the task, not really thinking about what I'm actually doing with my hands, it may be a chance for a peer to say, hey, why don't you take a break from that position for a second? So it is teamwork. So even though this is under sort of the umbrella of self-assessment, ultimately, and again, to go back to your dancing example, like it's hard to self-assess your dancing. It really helps to have somebody else looking at you being like, hey, this is what's going on. So the hand and wrist is key. Again, I'm biased to upper extremity hand and wrist issues, because if you can't palpate or manipulate tools, you don't have a career.
Right. Yeah. It's so true. And I remember many times being in situations where I, not at work, but just in life, where I was very protective of my hands because I knew that I was skier for many, many years. And I was always very worried, like even in skiing, that I was going to break my wrist or hurt my hand, because those were my most important tools, right?
You can't make a living.
Yeah. So preservation leads to resilience. Resilience is longevity. That's why we're here.
Right.
You said something earlier, Aaron, that I thought was very interesting, because the kind of cliche, stereotype is the, oh, my aching back, oh, my back, right? And you said earlier that you hear more people actually complaining about the neck, which I found interesting because I think it's just maybe not as talked about as much. However, there's a reason why there's a stereotype of, oh, my aching back, because a lot of people do have back pain, and it's real. And I've seen it in many colleagues, debilitating, like couldn't work kind of back pain. So tell me more about how the back plays a role in this and some of the things that might lead to back issues, how that might be prevented.
Yeah, the back is a pain in the back. It's definitely prevalent. I mean, not completely unique to vet medicine, but definitely a you know, a red flag for everybody in vet med. Again, because of the physicality of the job. So the what I often refer to as the all-American slouch. You know, we all kind of like, if given the chance, you just sort of relax. Everybody kind of tends to kind of cave forward. And then if we go back to, you know, the flexed kind of rounded position you need to be to do procedures, to do an assessment, to do, you know, to do palpations, to do a dental. And then if you think you're in this rounded position when you sleep, you know, the sort of fetal position, if you will, when you sleep. And then when you're standing in the checkout line, what do? Well, you still kind of curl over and scroll social media on your phone. So there's this incredible tendency to round our back. And that, similar to what I just said with the wrist and hand, that just puts those muscles that provide that support at a disadvantage. So they almost have no chance to do their best work. And if you multiply that by days, weeks, months, years, and if you want a career where you're healthy for decades, it's not compatible. So when doing this assessment, again, I think if we can kind of go back and figure out like what this should feel like, what a safe back position is, again, go back to, I hate to say, like, it's almost like a militaristic stance where you're sitting up or standing up nice and tall. Always think about that string pulling you from the top of your head to the ceiling. And that's going to tend to take that rounded posture and elongate your spine and unload your spine and let your muscles, again, do their best work. So it's taking the time to check in, you know, do these self-checks. And again, the idea of having somebody else take a look at you or a picture is worth a thousand words. And then when you do have to get down into space, when you do have to get down on the floor, for example, if we can think a little bit more about bending our knees, bending at the hips, like you're bowing forward, as opposed to just rounding forward, you're going to, every time you bend at the hips, sort of flex at the hips, again, think about bowing, you are, it's one less repetition where you're just slouching into, you know, it'll still get you, whether you slouch and sort of collapse onto the floor or whether you squat in a, you know, like almost like a mechanical, it'll look pretty mechanical, robotic, if you will. The more robotic you are, the more mindful you're being as you move, and you're giving your body the best chance, you know, the best muscles, the biggest muscles to do their job. Because as soon as you start rounding, you're at, if you will, like, you know, the second tier, the plan B muscles, the plan B support system. And if you keep going, then you're just literally hanging on your ligaments, which aren't contractile at all. And can you do that? Yeah. So I think that, you know, again, one of the tough things with talking about ergonomics with people, and especially with young professionals, is that it's not, you know, yeah, I can kind of get in a weird position, but, you know, it's sore for a minute and I don't think that much about it. It's okay for right now, but your body keeps score. And so when I talk to, you know, speak at a conference, the younger clinicians that I talk to can often kind of say like, oh yeah, you know, I feel this sometimes and, you know, I feel better once I'm on the weekend, I get a day off. Then I talk to their older counterparts who have been around for a while who can't remember the last time they didn't have some sort of ache or pain in their back. And it wasn't just because of what, and they're not doing anything more dramatically different, you know, at year 25 than they were year two. But it just accumulates over time. So with your back, think about doing these checks where you stand up nice and tall, you're bending at the hip, you're not slouching at your back and being more mindful, even if it doesn't hurt. And especially I would say, you know, if you feel good, you may be one of the few right now, if you think, oh, I'm in vet med and my back never hurts. One, you're a unicorn. So hang on to that, but also dial in how you move your body because it will extend your career easily.
Yeah, that level of self-awareness and that proactivity, especially for younger clinicians, Definitely can make a difference in the long run, because like all of us, it's one of those, though, when you're young and you're like, oh, I'm never going to be in this 25 years old. Guess what? It goes by a lot faster than you think, and so does the accumulation of the body discomfort. I was just thinking as you were talking, even just about this podcast, right? And it's mind and body strategies for success, right? And obviously I come from the mind perspective, and in this profession we talk about burnout. And one of the things I talk about with burnout is the fact that we have so much emotionally going on in this, in our lives and in the profession, that we just kind of plow through, right? Like we're stressed over debt, we're not sleeping enough, with caseload, criticism, not knowing enough, but all the things. Yet we just kind of plow through and we keep going, and then that cumulative effect, ultimately one day we find ourselves depleted and in burnout. I don't think we're talking about that as much with the body, and it's kind of like what you just said, like we get sore, like unless it's debilitating, that's when the body says, all right, you haven't been listening enough. But for the most part, I pick up that dog to put it on the table, and I go, oh, that one, oh no, I'm good, just wiggle it out and off I go, right? During dentistry, my neck would be screaming. And then I'd get up from dentistry, I'd stretch, maybe crack my neck a little and roll my shoulders, and off I would go. And I'm just curious, what you're seeing as far as you talked about it a little bit already, but like this impact of just feeling sore, moving on, plowing through, and just basically ignoring it all, which, is part of the problem.
It's absolutely part of the problem. And I think that it is, frankly, in vet medicine, it is unfortunately and unnecessarily seen as this is just part of the job. And I don't think that there's anybody that goes into vet med with a really clear understanding that this is what you can expect. And it does, and it adds to burnout, right? I think that there was a research paper on physical discomfort. And I think this was with like human healthcare, like maybe nurses, and as it related to job satisfaction. And this is, I mean, it passes a logic test, right? If I go into work and I feel pain, I'm in pain because of the work I do, it's hard to stay super motivated to be in this profession. I hurt. It's beating me up. And sure, maybe you're making a living doing it, you get a paycheck. But if you are literally physically suffering doing your work, it is not fair to assume that you're going to be completely excited about the work you're doing. It's that mismatch. And so there needs to be, I think, a little bit of a culture change in vet medicine. I think there needs to be more frank discussions about this. And kudos to the industry overall and to people like you, Jennifer, who can, speak deeply about the emotional side of things. And of course, I'm coming in more from the physical side of things, but I think that it's two pieces of the same puzzle that we have to talk about both, because there's both pain, emotional discomfort, physical discomfort. It's discomfort. It's under the umbrella of discomfort. And it's not fair to think that you can be suffering in either one of those and doing your best work and thriving in that. And I think that hopefully by us, talking to this podcast and our social media, our LinkedIn stuff that we talk about, we need to start saying, okay, we understand that's the way this is today, but what can we do to change that? And I know that there's a lot of demands in vet med that it's not fair to expect that they will change. Dogs aren't going to get lighter, or your patients aren't going to suddenly be half the weight that they are now.
No.
They're probably still going to be walking on the floor, so you're still probably going to have to bend down and look to pick them up or to do an assessment. Like, these things aren't going to change, but having more of an awareness and feeling like you can do something about it, versus saying, well, I just hurt and, I have to have PT and I have to have chiro and I have to see my ortho and I have to, take Advil by Thursday afternoon and I have to have two glasses of wine on Friday to kill the pain before I start feeling better. Like, that is not healthy. That is not normal, and it's not sustainable. So I think that here I am in my soapbox, like, we can do better. We can do better. Like, there are things, some of the stuff I'm talking about is, step one is that awareness. We have to be aware and be okay having the conversation, but sort of looking at yourself in the mirror or literally having somebody take a picture of you do your work or a video of you doing your work and say, oh, that's where my back starts to hurt. That's where my neck starts to hurt. And what can I do about it?
Yeah, it's so important. And what you were saying about the impact of all of this on our outlook, on the job, on everything, one of the things I talk a lot about, and I actually have a talk that I do at meetings about sustainable wellness in the profession. And we look at six primary areas where we can start to tweak what enhances and detracts from our energy. And one of those areas is physical, right? And you know, and also environmental, social, like a whole bunch of them. But the when we have aspects of our physical experience that are not the way that works for us, it literally detracts from our energy. It makes everything that much harder, that much less enjoyable, takes that much effort. It can lead to being more depressed or resigned or disinterested, disengaged, like all of the things. And we don't realize that it's not usually like one major thing. It's lots of little things in all aspects of life, but especially in this case, we're talking about the physical aspect. You know, a little bit of neck pain, you know, okay, a little bit of back pain, all right, and well, my knee hurts a little, like, right? And, but we don't realize that, especially at an energetic level, all of that is adding up to detract from our experience of life in general.
100%.
So one of the things that we always like to do on this podcast is to give people a few little takeaways that they can actually implement in their lives, like kind of like quick fixes here. So we know now a few basic ways we can assess our situation ergonomically. What is something that veterinarians or veterinary technicians or other support staff can change right away in their lives to make a difference?
Right away, take a look at your environment. Take a look at the literal physical environment that you have around you. And I recognize I just talked a lot about your personal physicality, but let's take a look at the environment first and foremost. Is it possible that the working height that you're at is the table height that you may be at, for example, is at a height that is comfortable for you? And what comfortable means, you can think of almost like having a cockpit, like a pilot would have a cockpit, like everything is like right within reach. And if it's possible, as it's possible, it may mean taking a second and making a table height. If you have an adjustable height table, that would be great. If you are on a stool, you may be able to adjust the stool up or down. So the height of whatever you're working with, maybe it's your patient, can be at the ideal level. So for example, Jennifer, you were talking about getting down on the floor, which is like, you know, one of the big parts of the sport of veterinary medicine is up and down off the floor, preferably a hard concrete floor for whatever reason, like if it has to be super tough. But having a stool to sit on, or even either like a low rolling stool, or even like those aerobic little step ups things you see in like aerobics classes, where you can kind of that are static, you know, they're not on wheels. Cause I've had some clinicians say they don't feel comfortable like rolling around too much for, you know, we don't want to run over a tail, but having like a small, low height seat or box even to sit on is a nice way to get the environment, you know, where you need at a height that is not too high nor too low, so you're not hunched over and again bending your back. Taking the time to position your patient as much as you can. Sometimes it is recognizing that you may be able to pull, you know, a table closer to you or to you to step closer to a table. We all know that if you were to, you know, think about, you know, holding a patient, you know, I hate to say holding a patient, but maybe holding a bag of groceries, you can either hold the bag of groceries close to you like you're hugging it. And if you take that same bag of groceries and you reach and you hold it far out in front of you, it's going to be a lot more demanding. And I think that as you were saying, like some of these like challenging, but not too challenging moments where it's like, yeah, it's a little bit awkward, but I'm okay right now because, you know, I can kind of just shake it off. Yes, but we're talking about your body keeping score. We're talking about accumulated load. So taking that one extra second, step in, make sure your environment is close to you, your patient is as close to you as it can be. And I recognize there's a laundry list of things that can't be changed, but every single time I do an ergonomic evaluation and I go into a clinic, 100% of the time, there are a couple things that could, environmental things that can be moved just a little bit to decrease the load.
Yeah. And it's, some of these things are easier than people realize. And I can just share real quick a few of the things that I did in practice that just I jotted down as you were talking. One was in we had one exam room that we called the large dog exam room where we had a lift table. And very often when I had to just chat with clients, I sat, well, the lift table was lower, so it was maybe like a foot off the ground. I sat on the lift table to chat with them, because that's the other thing is we don't realize often clients are sitting in a chair and we're standing. So again, it's that we're looking down at them or, you know, across the room at that diagonal, and that slight tilt of the head down can start to cause strain in the back of the neck. So if there is a way to lower yourself, then that would be ideal. The other thing I would do is in our area where I would type up records between appointments, it was kind of like kitchen cabinet or kitchen counter height of, over cabinets. And I'm, you know, like around 5'6", almost 5'7". So it was too low for me, the keyboard. So what I would do is I would stand with my feet really far apart. Yeah. So what it did is it lowered me so that I didn't have to hunch over to the keyboard or flex my wrists too much to type. So it allowed that straightening. And the other thing I did back then, a lot of positioning in dentistry has changed over the years, where now a lot more is done with the dog on their back. But back in the day, we often had the dogs lateral and then we put them on the other side. So what I started doing is actually putting my dogs just as much as possible diagonal on the table. I would just shift their bum over and their head over just enough so that I could more come straight at what I was doing and not looking around the bend. Big dogs, it wasn't always as possible. Cats, you know, always I would put them on this diagonal so that I could go head on. So just some real easy things that people can do. What about, I mean, we're all busy. It's crazy. We know vet hospitals are chaotic environments a lot of the times, and we don't necessarily have time to be like thinking about this all day long. Like what do you have to say to that? Because it's like, oh, who has time for this?
Yeah, 100%. So I think that this is where the way I like to approach this stuff is being really pragmatic. And so I think that I can, you know, wax poetic about ideal body mechanics and joint alignment and all that stuff. And there's the, you know, the concept of what looks good on a spreadsheet or if it's spelled out, like this is the way it should be. And then you walk into a vet clinic and you got to take that concept and throw it out the window because it's just like, this is not ideal. It's not going to be ideal. But at the same time, you know, to go back to these idea of like a tiny change, you don't want to throw away the whole thing. It's like, well, I can't always put a dog on their back. It's like, so okay, but can you, 1 out of 10 dogs, could you do that? You know, 1 out of 10, could you change that position? And if somebody says, well, yeah, once in a while, great. Then do it just that once in a while. It's a little bit less stress. It's a little bit less demand. It's a little bit less wear and tear, inflammation, and so on. But from the busy clinic, which is probably pretty much all of them, I want to add value to having 10 seconds. And if you tell me you don't have 10 seconds, I'm going to have to call you out on that. You have 10 seconds to take a pause and just stop and think. And during this 10 seconds in between patients, stop, stand up nice and tall, tuck your chin back for that double chin that we all love and hate. Think about squeezing your shoulder blades together, taking a deep breath, relax. There's your 10 seconds, on to your next case. You've just reset. You're not, you know, this isn't a stretch per se or an exercise session or anything. You're just reminding your body what a neutral, safe, ideal position is. Because I know you step into the next room, it's not going to be ideal, it's not going to be perfect or whatever, but at least feed that little bit of your nervous system, your musculoskeletal system, and say, hey, I know I've just been in a contortionist in one room and I'm going to go do it again in the next room. 10 seconds, you know, think of like drying the erase board, if you will. It's like, okay, we're starting fresh, a reset. 10 seconds, it makes a difference. And I would even say, I'm willing to kind of guarantee this, it's going to feel better. That 10 seconds of just stopping and standing up, taking a deep breath, squeeze your shoulder blades together, you're kind of unraveling some of the damage, if you will, that's been done. It will feel good. And we want that. We want that. Feel good, little, even if it's just a speck. We want our body to have moments where it feels good doing the work that we love to do, and not always, here's the work, here's the suffering. You know, we need to like sprinkle it with some like, hey, that actually felt good. Yes, I'm at work. Yes, I'm doing what I need to do. And oh, it feels really good to kind of stand up and do this. Give us some positive, you know, positive feedback.
Yeah. And like most things, and the things I talk about, the things you talk about, the crazy busy times when you're in it, so to speak, is not really when we can rely on new habits to come into fruition. And so by taking, what came to my mind was by taking those 10 seconds between patients, you know, you're all slouched or whatever, and then all of a sudden you sit up, pull the chin back, shoulders down, And you're like, okay. And then off you go. You know, you don't have to stand there for any period of time, but what you're doing slowly is you're creating muscle memory and neuroplasticity. So now your body starts to slowly, subconsciously memorize these positions. So now, after a while, when you are in that exam room and you're knee deep in a conversation with a client, and you're trying to look at the cat while they're telling you, you know, how many times their other cat peed in the last 5 days, and you're not paying attention to your posture, it can start to happen more automatically, that you start to build the habits of being in these more healthy positions.
Absolutely. And it starts with 10 seconds. It starts with 10 seconds.
And everybody
devalues, like, oh, it's not going to do anything. It's like, yes, it will. You don't need a 45-minute gym session or zero. It's like 10 seconds. Your physiology literally changes in 10 seconds. So do it.
Right. Well, and every six times you do that, you've done it for a minute, right? And so on. So cumulatively, just like the one time you're in an awkward position in dentistry, it's not likely to hurt you. It's cumulative. So is the reset. So is the creating of better habits and better
system.
Physiology. Yep. So real quick, Aaron, there's just one missing from today's conversation for me that we didn't really touch on, but I'm just very curious how this comes into play. We talked about positioning, posture, the neck, all the things. Where does the role of strength come into this, right? Because at the end of the day, our muscles are supporting our body. It's holding us up. You know, how do we look at that role in this all?
I am a lover of strength training because if you want to have an easier job physically, you want to be stronger. You know, the heavy dogs aren't as heavy when you're stronger. They don't feel as heavy, you know? And I think that we all have people in our life who's like, you know, or we've known people in our life that are like, that's the big, big, strong guy over there. Like, have him pick up the big, heavy box or the big dog or whatever like that. And I think that we all have the ability to improve our physical strength, improve our mobility, improve our balance through resistance training. And ultimately, one of the things I say often is that we want to make practice harder than the games, with meaning, in a sort of like a sports analogy, if you will, but the most challenging thing you do physically should not be at work, because you can't control the variables at work. You're sort of at the mercy of the next patient that comes in, the fatigue that you happen to have. It's late in the day or late in the week. You're already kind of pooped out, and you have to deal with whatever's in front of you in that moment. And so you're a little bit at the mercy of external environment, versus if you had a strength training program where you can control how many sets, how many reps, when you rest, when you add more resistance, when you take some resistance off, you can have control over that and dramatically change your physiology in a way that makes all of the work stuff feel that much easier. And we've talked on podcasts, and I have a ton of resources on this as well. But if you can think about doing some planks, for example, I don't need to demonstrate this. We all know what a plank is. A plank, super easy exercise, great for your, when done well, it's great for your core. It actually strengthens the muscles of your neck that have to hold up our bowling ball heads. Super great to do. No equipment needed. Another one would be a weighted carry. So pick up two dumbbells or two heavy bags. Think about those two heavy grocery bags that you're trying to like hustle across the parking lot to get to your car before the bags rip. Like that sort of resistance, great exercise. Build strength, build your durability. Doing squats, again, pick up a bag or get a duffel bag or something, hug onto it, and then sit down to a chair nice and slowly, stand back up. And if you think, oh, that wasn't too hard, make the bag heavier. You know, do more repetitions. Stimulate your body in a way that you're controlling when you can stop, you can control when you're like, I'm done, whatever I'm doing. But you are literally building physical capacity that carries over into the ergonomic bucket. Because now, again, we've kind of established that the work demands of vet medicine is high and challenging and unpredictable. But every time you do resistance training, you're bridging that gap. And so then the unpredictability, the physical challenges of vet med, you can become closer aligned to that, because the awkward positions, a long time on your feet, all that stuff, it's not going to go away. But if you had more ability to manage it, that's a sweet spot.
Well, that is all so incredibly important and such I've just loved this episode today for so many reasons. And one of it is because, like we said earlier, we're just not talking about the physical aspects of this profession enough in vet med. And I really appreciate that you're bringing this to the forefront. I have one last question for you as we close. First, I'm going to just share how people can find me. DrJenniferEdwards.com is my website, doctor with a DR. You can also email me, Jennifer@DrJenniferEdwards.com, or find me on LinkedIn at Dr. Jennifer Edwards. And I am a conscious leadership coach. So if you are a leader and you want to uplevel your experience of leadership and your team and really create an outstanding experience so that you have resilience in your leadership, resilience in your profession in a happy, fulfilling way, give me a call. I can help you with that. And so my last question for you, Aaron, is if someone wants to take this further, what should they do?
I think that the thinking small changes for a big impact, probably the best, simplest way to kind of get a hold of this would be to get this free veterinary ergonomic checklist that I created. It is a simple resource. It just gives you some place to start beyond listening to this podcast. And if you just email me info, that's I-N-F-O, info@projectvetspan.com. In the subject line, just put ergo resource. I will send you this PDF. It's a couple pages long. It's just a nice way. You can print it off or scan, look at it on your phone as you get into the office and start implementing some small changes. Of course, you can always check me out on LinkedIn as well on my website, projectvetspan.com. And of course, if I want even more direct feedback, I'm more than willing. I actually kind of enjoy looking at video clips and pictures of, you know, the front people on the front line doing these challenging, awkward things and trying to brainstorm a way to make it less risky, less injury prone, and less demanding for you. So feel free to send me any resources you have on that, and I'm happy to weigh in on my two cents. But I really appreciate you guys listening to this. This is obviously something I'm really passionate about, and I think there's a great opportunity to make veterinary medicine much more survivable, where people can thrive and not feel quite so beat up and dealing with all that wear and tear. So yeah, that's what the Resilient Vet is all about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Aaron, for this. It was a really great conversation, and I'll see you next time.
All right. We'll see you next time.